പോളണ്ടിൽ എന്ത് സംഭവിച്ചു?
പോളണ്ടിനെ പറ്റി നീ ഒരക്ഷരം മിണ്ടരുത്.
Hi, Harsha. I'm also going to mention today for people that, which I usually forget to mention, that there are spoiler warnings and maybe content warnings. We've pulled one of the films we were going to talk about today because we felt it didn't fit in with our theme today, which is
the sea and humans' relationship to the sea. And maybe some of the culture in Kerala, the communities in Kerala whose lives revolve around the sea and believes about the sea.
Yeah, and I found the films we did watch for today, I found really rooted in those communities. So, and not surprising for Malayalam cinema to do that. But, you know, I was sort of trying to wrap my head around themes around the sea, and you can have the sea as a calm and a lovely place, and we may see that in some of the films we explore. You see the sea as an angry, powerful force. We're definitely going to see that. And the sea as a metaphor for life, where, you know, tides ebb and flow and the waves crash, or changing phases of the sea that kind of mirror changing phases in life. So, you know, throughout the couple of episodes we're going to talk about these films, we'll probably see everything that we've just talked about. So we're going to start with Chimene.
Oh, before we start off with Chimene, there's also a, you can say, religious belief or faith that a lot of fishing communities observe of Kadalamma, who's supposed to be the manifestation of the ocean, so a goddess of the ocean. She's not necessarily somebody who's part of the Hindu typical pantheon. And in fact, a lot of these fishing communities are not Hindu. They are Christian or they're Muslim. But they still revere this particular figure or the manifestation of the ocean as something very important to their livelihood, to their lives, because, you know, fishing Arabian Sea is a dangerous job. So, I mean, you can think about it as a, you know, some sort of animistic belief, I guess. In most of these movies, they're not actually doing anything particularly religious, but they are obviously doing a lot of syncretic traditions between Christianity and their pre-Christian beliefs. That'll come into play in many of these movies.
Yeah, and definitely in Chimene. And I wanted to, I mean, this is such a huge film in terms of Malayalam cinema. It's the first Southern film to win a national award. It's the first Malayalam film to win a national award. It's often mentioned in like the best 100 Indian films of all time. It is a huge shame that any print quality I have seen is really terrible. I have a DVD copy and the print is terrible and the subtitling is miserable. It's sort of half there and half not. And I know there has been, the film was going to have its Golden Jubilee a few years ago, and there was some controversy around that by fishing communities or associations that felt that it wasn't a terribly flattering portrait of their community.
Yes, that it's very regressive.
Well, and, you know, from our perspective now, it is a regressive film. So let me get into the plot a little bit. It was adapted by a novel by T.S. Pillai called Chimene. And it explores this folk myth amongst fishing communities in coastal Kerala that the fate of a fisherman depends on the chastity of his wife. So, you know, already there is a fairly, from our perspective now, 60 years later, is a fairly regressive idea. We have the story of Chemban Kunju, who is a Hindu fisherman whose ambition is to own his own boat and nets. And he has his eldest daughter, Kartame, played by Sheila, and she's in love with a Muslim fish trader, Parikuti, played by Maru, because they all know that Parikuti is actually sweet on her too. They get her to ask him for the money to buy the boat and the nets. And he agrees, but he also says, when you bring in your haul, you'll give it to me and I'll sell it. And that's how we'll work out the money. But unfortunately, Chemban Kunju is very ambitious and greedy and completely ignores this end of the deal. And it causes some strife in the community too, because his daughter is of a marriageable age and it's obvious that the two young people are in love, and the community fears that if that they think he should have married his daughter off instead of buying the boat in order to keep the community safe. And I paused there and I'm thinking, oh my God, there's so much more to this story. Eventually, Cartame is married off to another man who's an orphan. I don't know what the reasoning is behind them marrying her off to him, but you know, obviously they just don't want to marry him. I'm doing a very bad job of this.
The reason they don't want to marry her to Paricudi, well, religion is one thing, but yeah. It's also the fact that they believe like a son-in-law who lives with them can help him earn more money.
But there's always this undercurrent between Sheila and Madhu.
Lots of pining.
I mean, seriously, Madhu spends the whole film lying on the beach pining. You know?
This is like almost like the cliche about this movie.
It's also from a period where the acting is still fairly theatrical as well. So you have to, if you're going to watch this film, you kind of have to prepare yourself for this place and this time and this moment and how, you know, acting is done at those times and for this theme that by today's standards is reasonably regressive. What I found really interesting, though, is Cartame is insistent, actually, that they should leave and go to the community he's from because she fears that because she's so drawn to Madhu's character, that she fears that something will go wrong and then, you know, everything will hit the fan. And that they get married and they go. On her wedding day, her mother falls sick. And her, you know, it's sort of the beginning of the calamities. They go to the new, you know, his community and everything seems fine for a while, except she's very beautiful and they've heard the rumors. And she cannot get away from this stigma of being in love or having another man in love with her. But it's quite interesting though that she and her husband are actually reasonably affectionate. Like she is making the best of this relationship. Near the end of the film, they have a daughter together and everybody assumes that it's not his daughter, but he still believes in her.
You have a longer maybe relationship with this movie. I mean, I think I've always found this movie hard to get into because my encounters with Hedda have been mostly in black. The acting is very theatrical. And even in the movie, it's really hard for me to, having lived in India, it's still hard for me to understand this woman is like trying her best. And why is everybody making up stories about her? And so it's hard with the perspective of 70 years.
Close to 60,
I think. Close to 60 years.
It's what, 65?
Yeah, 60 years to understand why this movie is such a classic. Thakri Shivshankarapilla, who's the author behind of the novel, is a very famous novelist. So yeah. Part of it is that he's a popular novelist, so obviously when his work gets adapted into a movie, you know, it's not just a movie. It's also a movie that comes from a novel, so which has a, you know, much better reputation and has much more refined origins than a movie. But this is also, once again, a man from a community that is not one of these fisher communities writing about this community. And part of that is why I think I find it really hard to get into. And to be honest, we don't have enough people from who grew up in family that worked in fishing in the industry to tell these stories. So there's a lot of disconnect for me to this movie. I do find the music very beautiful and haunting. And I think that is one of the reasons this movie is such a big success.
The music is gorgeous.
The music is gorgeous.
And I'm a sucker for music from the 50s and 60s where they did these gorgeous orchestrations. And you don't see that kind of orchestration done today mm-hmm. because, you know, styles have changed. But it's very beautiful. And Madhu is gorgeous, you know, for a 60s.
For a 60s year old. Yeah. You know, this is also a big reason. I was like, why is this woman dying for Madhu? I actually find Satyen and his acting a lot more accessible. And so maybe that's another reason why I don't get the entire point of this movie is he's being normal and everybody is acting at a different range.
Yeah, and I end up quite liking his character. At first, I wasn't sure, but he does have a lot of faith in his wife, no matter what anyone is saying. And I mean, he dies at the end because she ends up being unfaithful to him finally. And I mean, I find that incredibly sad. But yeah, like I mean, I'm sorry, but I love Madhu, and I think, you know, I would pine for him too in that time period. Like it's not again, it's a very 60s with his little pencil mustache, and so like that's the mindset I'm putting myself into. But you have no idea what kind of husband he would be because he spends the whole movie pining. And I guess on some level you're supposed to find that very romantic. But given the theme of the movie where, you know, infidelity will wreak havoc in a community and will cause the death of your husband, and eventually, you know, what happens with her father is he ends up losing everything as well. He loses his wife, he loses his livelihood, he remarries and she gives the money away to the son so he can escape. And it's just sort of sad.
Yes, it's a deeply sad and hopeless movie in a lot of
Yeah.
ways. I'm not sure why a lot of movies that we watched for this week are a little bit sad and hopeless.
Well, the alternative is that, because you know, you mentioned people not coming out of that community to create content about that community. And what often happens about, you know, because I've mentioned before that my dad is from Newfoundland, which relies heavily on fishing, and my family has been in fishing. And what often happens with those communities is stories about them get told as they're sort of, you know, happy people despite their poverty, or you know, the hard lives they're living, and look, they'll sing and dance. And at least it's not that.
I do feel like that's a big part of some of these movies is like they all drink and beating their wives is very normal, but they're happy people despite all this.
Well, you mean we I mean to give a Hindi example, there's Bobby and, you know, her father and their community, and that's what they're portrayed like.
Yeah, and often that's in Hindi at least, that's a stereotype of Christians in general, because a lot of Christians do come from the seafaring and fishing communities. In Kerala, it's not necessarily a stereotype of all Christians because there's casteism within Christianity. It's a stereotype of Latin Christians and Catholics and not of people who are from sort of the sort of northern Travancore part of or Kochi, old Kochi kingdom.
But it's like we're going to end up with either that stereotype or the stereotype of people being, you know, tied to these myths and absolutely miserable otherwise. Because there are a lot of the characters. There's the woman who lives next door who has a miserable life, and like there's so many miserable people here. And the final scene is Kartame's sister holding her daughter, and it's like, what kind of life are they going to have? They have nobody left either.
Yeah, well, this is very sad, and it's about people who seem condemned to a cycle of poverty and loss because the job they do is so risky, and which explains the reason there's all these myths built around it, you know,
Yeah.
as a way to control something that is fairly unpredictable, which is life spent in the ocean. And that creates maybe that element of extra control over women. I mean, it makes sense to me that this myth exists because often these men are out at night and their wives are at home. That's a way to control female sexuality, is to say that, hey, your husband is going to die if you are unfaithful to him.
Yeah, and I even was sort of racking my brains to figure out if we had any kind of myths like that coming out of our community, because we have things like widow walks, you know, where you wait for your husband to come back. I'm sure there must be.
What is a widow walk? Can you explain?
It's kind of like a balcony around the top of a house where you can walk and see out to sea.
Oh,
So,
okay.
you know,
So
yeah.
that's where, and is that particularly tied to the fishing community your family came from?
That I can't answer.
Okay.
I kind of know it exists as kind of a general thing. I mean, I know there are myths in Ireland and Scotland for Erin sweaters, and that must be Ireland, where, you know, complete myth that you would knit a sweater, and if your husband didn't come back or they found a body washed up, they'd identify the sweater by the stitches you used. So yeah, I mean, that complete myth, but you know, obviously in communities that are risky professions, there are stories that built around the things that happen in these communities. One of the reasons I do think that this film, its persistence, I think, is partly the National Award, partly the technical. I look at The Prince and I think at some point this must have been a very beautiful film. Partly the editing, because here we have Hrishikesh Mukherjee as an editor. You have Mana Day making his Malayalam film debut as a singer in the song that, you know, has Madhu pining through the whole film.
Yep.
So I think there are
Manas
a lot of...
Mine.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that come together that make people connect with this film in different ways as a classic rather than with the story or the acting. Like, I do find it terribly sad, and I would recommend it for someone who really wanted to get into Malayalam films with some of these warnings that the prints are going to be terrible, the subtitles are terrible, the story is regressive, but it will, you know, at least give you a taste of what's considered a classic.
And the fact that it's very much still celebrated, you know, as you said, when the 50th anniversary was a big deal for this movie. It's considered a milestone for Malayalam cinema.
Yep.
And I think there's definitely a pre-Chimin Malayalam cinema and there's a post-Chimin Malayalam cinema, where I think you can say that Malayalam cinema kind of emerges onto equal standing with the other industries in India. I think one of the things I went back and read your review of Chimin, and you mentioned actually that in Celluloid, the Prithviraj movie, which is about the first Malayalam movie made, that the director of that movie kind of experiences the celebration around Chimin as a moment of triumph, of a moment of sadness, because he started the ball rolling for this industry.
Well, and it's Srinivasan's character who is playing, you know, a journalist searching for J.C. Daniels.
Oh, yes.
Who is standing outside this shop drinking a soda, and he hears the news. And the film shows a figure of an elderly man walking away, and he doesn't realize that this is J.C. Daniels. So you have this great news of this great momentous moment in Malayalam cinema with nobody recognizing, you know, the man who made the first films, which is, you know, I don't love Celluloid as a film, unfortunately, but it is a great moment in expressing how sometimes we don't honor our film cultures enough and things get lost. And I think that's what's happening with Chimin too, that because it's being allowed to, I mean, it hasn't been restored. Every once in a while it gets this little bubble of acclaim or this reminder of its acclaim. But again, it's a film that is kind of lost in the wave of what came after.
I wonder why, I mean, you know, since Celluloid came out, there's been an effort to honor J.C. Daniel and P.K. Rosie, the female lead of the movie, more. And I wonder if there will be, in a couple of years, has Madhu passed away?
No.
Okay, so Madhu and Sheila are still alive, and Satyan has passed away.
Yeah.
So maybe, unfortunately, when they pass away, or there will be a reawakening of interest in this movie, maybe we'll get a making of. of Chimin because that'll I think could sort of reawake some interest again in this movie, because unfortunately for the reason you may love this movie or it captures your interest in a way that it doesn't for me is because I've first experienced it, as I said, through random clips on cable and through comedy shows that made fun of the tropes of this movie and you know, mimicry art. So that's my first experience of this movie. So it is harder to take it a little seriously, but I think it's kind of fallen to the lowest common denominator of Malayali culture to represent it. Maybe it needs to be taken up to, you know, an artist like Prithviraj or an artist or one of the more respected directors of Malayalam cinema to reimagine why Chimin was important to Malayalam film culture.
That would be nice. And I think, but sometimes when it's you know, you've mentioned how your perceptions of it have been formed. And I'm going to imagine that for some of these people in the business, they know about it and they understand its importance. But again, it's not kind of the prime thing to talk about when you're in an industry that's now really thriving again and there's so much more to talk about. So it would be nice, actually, you know, you mentioned like a making of, it would be really nice before Madhu and Sheila pass to have some kind of interviews with them and some documentary kind of format to talk about that film and put it in context from their perspective. That would be lovely.
Yeah, I would be really interested to see a making of documentary and maybe put this movie into the context of what it was like before and what it was like after.
Yeah.
And some of the technical innovations that it brought to Malayalam cinema, what it was like to bring Hrishikesh Mukherjee to Malayalam cinema, and the high level of sort of national cooperation this movie required to make it the big hit that it is. And the story of how it got attention from the center, from Delhi, and, you know, why it still has the kind of impact that it does. It's unfortunately a part of the story that's missing, because often people talk about the plot line, the origins from novels, but they don't necessarily talk about why it's still important to us today. And maybe it's not. But I would like an exploration of it instead of, you know, when we just honor something for because it's 50 years old, it doesn't really make any sense to me, because lots of things are 50 years old, like movies are 50 years old.
No, and that's, you're right. That's what it needs is context. Like, if you were putting it on a list of best 100 Indian movies of all time, why? And the context very much is missing for that. I mean, I can tell you what, from my perspective, how it touches me and how I see it, but I still don't have the kind of background that it would take, as you talk about, to discuss before Chameen, after Chameen. And that, I think, would be a fitting way to honor this film, you know, to say that it was important in this period, in this time, it did this, even if its ideas are fairly regressive by today's standards, and, you know, the acting is not what we would expect in a film today. But let's put that aside and consider everything else about it that made it such a key moment in Malayalam cinema.
So a free idea for Amazon Prime or Netflix or any of the 100 streaming platforms out there. Make a Chameen documentary.
Yeah, or, you know, Prithviraj, here, I will be ever grateful for you.
I feel like this is very much up Prithviraj and his sort of mission to make Malayalam cinema international and national.
Yeah, because he's talked about that a lot, you know, and we have to give films context. We have to give all films context. But, you know, when you're looking back 60 years and you can see that, you know, there are issues with this film, why was it so important? Let's give it the context. Well, we've said that. But it is a really good example of, you know, the sea as metaphor for, you know, the lives of these people in this community.
And the other thing is, it does kind of set a template for depiction of the fishing communities and Malayalam cinema's relationship with the ocean going forward. So we'll see that in some of the other movies we're going to talk about today, including, are you ready to transition into?
Yes.
Thumbolikarapuram, which is a very different genre. It's much more of a, it's the tone, I mean, it is sad, but the tone is very different. There's a lot of comedy and comedy side plots in this movie.
Yes.
And I can't even remember if I've ever seen this movie before, honestly. I'm sure I did, because this was around the time, it came out in 1995.
Yep.
And that's around the time my family got a VCR, so we were watching all the movies on video cassettes. And so this movie is about two fishermen, played by Vijay Raghavan and Manoj Kajan, who are kind of rivals in this particular fishing community. They got into it at one church festival or something. and they've kind of been at each other's throats. And Vijayaraghavan especially is kind of somebody the community looks up to protect them from loan sharks, and because he's always ready for a fight. And Vijayaraghavan has this woman who, played by Susmita, who is his neighbor, and she's in love with him and has been since she was a kid. But he's always drinking and getting into fights, so he never considers himself husband material for her. Meanwhile, Manoj Kejayan falls in love with the daughter of a very rich member of this fishing community, played by Priyaraman. And they run away together, get married, and he brings her to come live with him in this fishing community. And despite the fact that him and Vijayaraghavan's character are always fighting, Vijayaraghavan, unlike the rest of the community, welcomes the new couple, despite the stigma that might be attached to them having run away, and the fact that there could be repercussions from her family, and the family has a lot of power over this community. So Vijayaraghavan welcomes them, lets them stay at his little shack, and basically because there's always this threat from her family about attacking Manoj Kejayan's character and trying to take her back home, Vijayaraghavan becomes their protector. And then at some point, people start making up rumors about her lack of this Priyaraman's character is potentially having an affair with him, Vijayaraghavan, while her husband is at sea. And that kind of forms the climax where lots of people die.
This one actually really surprised me, because I had this perception of Jayaraj as a director of arty festival-y films, and I think that's the only exposure I'd kind of had to him. And this is very definitely not that.
This is very massy, yeah. And yeah. I was kind of surprised too when I was Googling the movie, and I was like, oh, Jayaraj, he's the one who directed this, because I think these days he's kind of done experimental movies, but he did fundamentally come from a massy film background. You know, he did the huge hit Malayalam movie For the People, which was also experimental in a lot of ways. Yeah, through the 90s, he was making very mainstream massy films.
Yeah, so that was like a huge surprise for me with this. Also, Silksmita, who has more of a reputation, I mean, she's literally been called like a soft porn film star, and she's not that here.
No, and the thing is, I've never thought of her just as a item girl, even though that is her reputation. That's kind of what's portrayed in Dirty Picture and stuff. Because I think in Malayalam movies, she's actually done more proper roles in movies, in Spadigam, even though she is kind of playing like a sexy character in Spadigam. I was wondering, is there stuff in this movie that is still sexualizing her? I think the only thing I can come up with is that her lungi, unlike all the rest of the women, is tied below her navel. And that's the only part that is remotely a little bit sexier than the other women. And the fact her hair is cut very modern compared to the rest of the women.
Well, and Mary's character too. She has beautifully manicured nails.
Yes, Mary is Priyaraman's character, and Clara is Silksmita's character.
I mean, Silksmita is gorgeous.
She is.
And the camera just eats her up. She's got beautiful lines. So you could see how people I kept thinking of Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And how people overlooked the fact that Marilyn Monroe had actual talent because she was such a sex bomb, and how much of a shame that is. And I feel kind of the same way about Silksmita, particularly watching a film like this.
They both have this very like pouty image, both Silksmita and Marilyn Monroe, which I think that, you know, how their face looks sometimes. I mean, maybe it is intentional, I don't know, to make themselves, you know, more sexy in front of the camera. But sometimes even when she's crying, she is oozing sensuality in a way some of the other women aren't.
One of the things I really loved about this film is how Williams, Manoj Kejayan's character, meets Mary, because they meet in a church procession, and he's carrying a cross, and somebody drops a candle and he stops her from stepping on it. So that's like the first time. And then...
Yeah, that was... I don't know why. I found it really beautiful for some reason.
It was.
Unlike a lot of meet cutes. I mean, I don't find this movie necessarily beautiful, but that one was very... I don't know. It was a very nice meet cute.
But it's a series of them too. She's walking along in the market and she's distracted looking at him. She knocks some vessels over. And then they end up in the communion line in church and both end up in front of the priest at the same time. Like, it was really beautifully done. And I think that's Jeyaraj. I think you can see him as a director in those kind of moments. But then, you know, we contrast it with, what's the character, Stanley, he calls himself?
Yeah, the Stanley who is Chelapan or something is what his aunt calls him. But he is from somewhere in the Gulf. And he just talks in English, and he's basically like cosplaying like a Western tourist with his little Bermuda shorts and giant umbrella, trying to he's sunbathing to become lighter.
White.
Yeah, that is. And I was very, and then like there's all these like random jokes that are clearly inserted into this movie. That was, they were like, we need a comedy subplot, so.
Well, and you have Indran's for that as well.
Yes.
Although Indran's gives us our Chameen connection.
Chameen connection and Manish of the Dari connection.
Yes, yes, yes. He's introduced with the song that Shobhana does.
And yeah. He refers to himself as Nagavalli.
Yes.
A lot of these movies from the 90s, and I think maybe even when we're not talking about Chandavatta, but obviously, there's a vacuum where we should be talking about Chandavatta, where there's a feminization of the men who in these for sure communities who are not necessarily the more like drinking, fighting type of men. So Indran is that character in this movie, and he's quoted as gay, possibly yep. trans, definitely queer, and so he's considered crazy by everybody in the community.
Yeah, it's nice to see him having had a chance to move away from stuff like that, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's looking at him now as the actor he is versus what he had to do in the 90s. I'm like, man, we really did not give these actors their fair play.
Yeah, and thankfully, he is one amongst a number of them who are getting that now, thankfully.
Priya Raman is actually somebody I really like from the early 90s, I just think she's very beautiful to look at, and when she's given a chance, she can play these sort of modern girl characters really well. I know her best from Sainyam, the movie where she's with Mamoodi and Vikram, and so that's kind of where she starts off, and she's now known better as a serial actor, but I really do enjoy watching her in these early 90s movies.
I think this is the first time I've seen her in anything. Possibly. And I actually went looking and was sort of struck by the fact that she is very much on TV these days and not mm-hmm. doing movies, which is, I mean, you know.
I hope she maybe gets a chance to. I know she wasn't maybe one of the standout female stars of that era. She's definitely not Shobhana or Revathi or any of these figures. But like, I remember I used to watch, I never watched Malayalam serials, but I used to watch Malayalam serial with my grandmother just because I really liked her a lot. And I found her a very charismatic actor. And let's see, who else are some of these long forgotten actors? So the actor who plays Stanley, he is in a lot of movies of the 90s, and I kind of don't know where he has disappeared to these days. I'm trying to remember his name.
Yeah, I'm even looking at the cast list that I've got here, and I can't even find him on it because I think they probably haven't given him the name Stanley. They've probably given him whatever his character's real name is.
Oh, Augustine is another actor who in this movie, he was in two of the movies that we watched for this week, but one we decided to put aside.
As was Manoj K. Jain.
Yes, as was Manoj K. Jain.
Who is someone we have also talked about as maybe not as well served by New Gen Films. He's certainly been in some of them, but I think he's probably a lot more well known for the pre-New Gen things.
Yes, we talk about him for Anandabhadram, and I'm not sure why he's not as much of a well-liked or preferred actor for New Gen films, because you know, it's kind of been a luck of the draw for some of these actors from the 90s. You know, Indrans has made this new career for himself, obviously. Many of the female, Urvashi has definitely made a name for herself. I don't know why Manoj Kajan hasn't really been in these movies. Prem Kumar is the actor we were looking at, who plays Stanley. I don't know. He's just completely disappeared off the map in terms of Malayalam cinema. I haven't seen him in anything recently. I mean, it seems like he's still acting. I mean, his IMDb is still got him in movies. I just don't remember him being in anything. And also, an actor we might know well from New Jeff movies is Babaraj. He's kind of like one of the junior artists in the background.
Yeah, I mean, he actually gets the final credit in Wikipedia entry. But I think it was like, blink and you'll miss him.
Yep. I saw him in a background, standing in the background laughing at something.
Well, it was enough to give him a credit on the film.
And Augustine, the actor, people might know best because he's the father of Anne Augustine, more recently working now. He's passed away, but he was very much one of these gadfly actors in Malayalam movies of the 90s. So I think this is a good example of how so much of Malayalam movies of the 90s just employed a ton of actors and, you know, filled out these casts with all these characters who, you know, kind of make like, they would just like, you know, come in, make a few jokes and leave. We don't necessarily have the same kind of, I mean, we have the same different actors doing this, but I feel like Malayalam cinema always has this like well-stocked cast of character actors.
Well, and certainly from that period. Although I think some of the films I love best are films where you get this big ensemble cast because it becomes about more than the stars, if you know what I mean. Like a film like Virus is probably a good example where it was more about the story than, you know, having any one big star. You had this whole, you know, this massive cast of people to tell this story.
Well, I was specifically talking about these movies where there is a hero, but then there's this well-stocked, all these other side characters. I think in many ways, that's what gives Malayalam movies their very lived-in quality. For example, Bollywood movies really struggle with is that oftentimes they don't feel lived in, that the roles, the lives don't feel lived in because there aren't all these tangential people coming in and out.
Well, there was something, Anurag Kashyap said something about that the other
yes,
day too.
Yes, that's what I was referring to.
And you know, I had a conversation back channel with a bunch of people who felt he was wrong. And because the way he phrased it was the films are very rooted, but I think this is what he's talking about is more what you've been trying to explain here.
Well, I don't know who, and he said South, but actually we can think about it more as Tamil and Malayalam than Telugu movies, because Telugu movies do have the larger than life characters. Yeah. Yes, they have a lot of like side comedy roles, but you know, it is very heavily hero focused compared to the kind of more ensemble casts that Malayalam and Tamil movies have. And so I guess it depends on what South Indian films you are encountering in your day-to-day cinema viewing. And Anurag Kashyap has a much stronger relationship with Malayalam movies than he does with some of the other in South Indian industry. So he could very well be that's what he's talking about.
Well, and there is, if this is the way you're looking at it, is still a hero film with this cast to fill it all out. There is no reason that Bollywood could not do that. They have a wealth of character actors who could fill those kinds of roles.
But the thing is, Bollywood movies or the creators behind those movies have a fundamental discomfort with depicting anybody outside their narrow social strata. Yes, when South Indian movies depict these characters, they're often, you know, the object of humor. But, you know, Johnny Lever used to play these characters in Hindi movies at a certain point. Now, you could never imagine it because the lives of people, the characters that Johnny Lever used to play, are so far away from the nepotism kids of Bollywood. So mentally they're all living in New York. So it's really hard for them to make movies that are in any way rooted. Even the NRI movies were a little bit more rooted of, you know, like the late 90s, early 2000s were at least a little bit more rooted than what Bollywood is producing now.
Yeah.
Again, that we're talking about Bollywood as in represented by Karan Johar, Yash Raj, Excel Entertainment. We're not talking about whatever stuff they're putting out on Netflix and Prime, because I think that's coming almost from like a substrat of the industry that's not necessarily the same as the people who get the most press in Bollywood.
Or they're churning out endless historical films these days.
Yes, so many historical
films. I mean, that's coming through elsewhere as well. I mean, we've seen, you know, a number of historical films from the South as well. But yeah, Bollywood seems to be stuck in this place as well right now, and it doesn't allow for those kinds of stories and those kind of casts.
I think it's also a political thing, because when you depict anything that is not fun young people falling in love in the West or something in the distant past, I think you have to actually address the sociopolitical aspects of the country you're living in, of the place where you are citizens. And I think Bollywood is fundamentally not comfortable doing that. I think, yes, it's often attacked. There isn't a lot of leeway for them. When I talk about Bollywood, I'm often meaning the Punjabi families who crossed over during partition and are basically the founders of the Hindi film industry. That's who I'm talking about. I don't think they are comfortable addressing these questions because they very much live in a bubble. And I don't think a lot of this, what is happening in India overall, affects them.
Well, and then, that's part of the reason why you see people turning south, because they want these stories that aren't necessarily political, but if they are, they're dealt with. There's stories like some of the ones like almost everything we talk about that are very rooted in particular communities or, you know, settings. I'm trying to grab us back around to our theme for today. So, you know, but bottom line is, it kind of makes sense to me that people are looking for something different.
For me, at least, the unexpected fact that a Kannada movie, KGF, has been doing so well is because, yes, it's a massy movie, but it has a certain place in history. It has a certain place in time that, unfortunately, a lot of Bollywood movies just don't. Yeah, looping us back to Thumbali Kadapuram, it is a certain place in time. It is a certain place in history. Whether Fisher folk of the 90s were still talking the same way they were talking in Chemmeen with the same non-standard Malayalam is a good question, because it feels like some of these characters are, you know, the fish community is otherized very much. It's, you know, it's a bit like the rest of Kerala has progressed, but these people are living in a historical bubble and they still talk the way they used to. They're still out there rowing boats. There's no motors.
It may have been in the
one. It was in Chamam. I noticed the
motorboats.
Motorboat in Chamam, because I was like, that was 2 years earlier than this movie, Thumbali Kadapuram. So I was like, why is nobody using a motorized boat? Like, why are they still using the old-fashioned boats that they were using in Chemmeen? I think it was just part of the aesthetic, that people who wanted to make a movie about fisher folk were going to make a movie about them not having access to modern equipment to fish.
That could bring us to the last film we're going to talk about today, because there's some of that going on as well.
Yes, we're going to be talking about Pudhiya Thirangal from the Satyanantigad Moral Values Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and it's like, it's, I either really love Satyanantigad's films, and some of them, you know, I mean, some of them are very classics, and the ones written by Srinivasan are very incisive and sharp and funny. And then you have his whole moral universe.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't hate Satyanantigad movies.
Yeah.
I often do enjoy them a lot. It's just, they have very, like, the Hindi word is sanskari.
Yeah.
Like, they're full of moral values and just brimming with them. And unlike the other two movies we discussed, people have a happy ending always. Satyanantigad does not let the audience walk away out of his movies feelings bad.
So you want to summarize this one?
Yeah, it's about the main character is basically played by Namita Pramod. She's been orphaned. And actually, that's kind of a through line in a lot of movies about the ocean, is the ocean, the Kadalama, she provides, but she also can take away families very quickly. She's been orphaned and she has a group of friends. One is Divinpoli and the other one is Sadashiva. And she's working to educate herself, but she's still out there working in the fishing business. And she comes across a old man who doesn't necessarily know where he's from, who he is. And she kind of adopts him because she doesn't have her own family. And in the meantime, she kind of has this romance with Divinpoli. And at the end, they all live happily ever after, as happens in the Satyanandakad moral value cinematic universe.
Well, and this is still Divinpoli in his heartthrob era.
Like, yes.
I haven't watched one of his early films in such a long time that it was like, whoa, forgot about that.
Yeah, I was, you know, I used to really watch all the Divinpoli movies that came out around his early years because he was so hot.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to watch a movie where it was very clear that the male lead was picked for, I mean, acting, but also because he was genuinely good looking. And now he's sadly let himself go.
But the interesting thing for me about this film is Tamara's character. Well, first of all, in Chimene, the woman is kind of the central character too, but she's on shore and she's pining. And usually what happens in fisher communities is the men go out to sea and the women stay back.
They sell the fish.
Yes. You know, in the community I'm from, women work in the canneries, but it's all on shore.
Yes, that's exactly the same way in Kerala as well. You know, the men come in early morning at dawn and the women take their fish. They're out in the market. They also go around the neighborhoods and they sell them house by house. That's typically how I was in Trivandrum when I was growing up. So the women are very much actively in the business of selling fish as well.
But she is in the business of being on the boat. She goes out with them. So that's already a departure.
Yeah, because she's an orphan and she doesn't have anybody else to rely on.
And she ends up, there's a whole newspaper article about her. I mean, this is one of the things too that has come through these films, is this is a community that supports, generally, not so much in Chimene, but there it is a community that kind of clings together and is tightly knit, for better or for worse. I mean, Chimene, it's kind of for worse. And in this film, it's for better, because left as an orphan, she's supported by the community and encouraged by the community and thrives.
Yeah. And again, this might be part of, because it is full of moral values. This is kind of how Satyanandakad's characters exist, because they exist with the goodwill of the community around.
And I mean, you know, it could be any community.
Yeah. It could be. It's not just the fishing community. Literally all of his characters are very rarely isolated. They're often surrounded by people with good intentions, good hearts, who are always looking after the neediest among them.
And I actually like the first half of this film a lot, because it does settle us into this place and into this community. And we like this young woman and, you know, we like the people she's with. And I mean, the risk here is, again, you're holding this up as a false view of this community where everyone is happy and nice and friendly. I mean, at least in Chimene, we know that's not necessarily the case. I mean, props to Chimene for that. And there are call outs to Chimene in this, particularly in one of the songs where she's dressed like Sheila and the three friends are dressed like Madhu in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think if there was anything else. I was sure there was something else. Normally I love Nedumudi Venu, and I just couldn't connect with his character in this film at all.
Is that because he is full of moral values?
I don't think it's the actor's fault. I think it's the way that character is written.
A little bit cloying?
He's also, I mean, he's meant to be kind of mysterious. And
yeah.
But then, you know, sort of as it goes on, they decide he's mad. And then they have to find the solution for why he's mad. And that, like, all of that, I was kind of like, oh dear. Like, I felt myself disconnecting from this. So I don't think it's him necessarily at fault here, because he was an impeccable actor. But I just don't think that character is very well written at all. He's a plot device.
He is, exactly. He is a plot device. And at the end of, because of the general vibe of this movie, I knew it was going to end up the way it's going to end up. So, I don't know, I'm like very uncomfortable with treating older people like children or like taking away their agency. I think that's where my discomfort with this movie comes from.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that a lot. So I think I'm with you there on that. I mean, contrast it to, oh, what's the Dr. Bijou film about the orange trees? House of Orange Trees. I apologize, I can't pull the title right out of my head, but it's the same kind of character that he's playing, but he takes agency for himself. And then to see a character like this where he's just sort of flailing all over the place because, you know, he has to be looked after, or and the way he's written, you know, he takes her money and treats her all with it, but then they discover he's taken her money, and it just, once we get into all of that, the film lost me.
I think when people watch this, they might be watching it for a Niven Bali movie. This is not really a Niven Bali movie. This is very much about Tamara, Namida Pramod's character, and her relationship with Nedaburi Renu. He's just there as sort of the eye candy of the movie.
Well, and there's the sort of nod to the one guy in the community who has been part of the, you know, acting, and he wants his break. A film comes to the shoreline, and he gets tossed out when they hire Niven Polly to take his place. And it's like, well, of course they're going to hire Niven Polly, poor guy. But you know, that's sort of the nod to, you know, the Niven factor at this point in time.
And another tie to some of these movies that have a element of people aspiring to artistry who are coming from the fishing communities. So this movie has a lot of elements you might find in other movies about the sea in Malayalam cinema. But unlike a lot of the tragic stories, you come away happier than you would from Chennai or Thumboli Kadapuram.
Well, and there is a gorgeous moment. Her father is played by Siddiq, and I mean, he adores her, and he brings her onto the boat when she's a girl, and we know he's going to die. Because of the way that scene is shot of him walking out and walking out, you know, to the sea. And you just, I went, oh God, yeah, he's gone. And I honestly cried at that because it's so beautifully shot. But yeah, that's the one, you know, you're going to get some emotional tugs here, but you're going to end up with a happy ending.
The other thing is that this is one of Namita Pramod's earlier movies. She's still like a teenager. Yeah. She's under 18 in this movie, but unlike maybe some of the, this might be the first movie I've seen her in, but the second movie we've discussed on the podcast about her. And I actually do enjoy her as an actress, I'm realizing. She's pleasant enough. I just don't think she's super invested in having an acting career, because a lot of the movies she's done, she did before she was in her 20s. So clearly there was a lot of pressure from the family to be an actor. I'm kind of interested to see what her next step is going to be. She's very close to that guy we don't talk about. So yeah,
unfortunately.
I hope she does not end up either acting in his movies or becoming his fourth one.
We went there. No, but I agree with you. I find her very pleasant on screen.
She is. And oh, it's kind of surprising. She's actually got a bunch of movies coming up. Okay. But it doesn't seem like she's going to be in anything that, you know, I would be super excited about. Al Malu was honestly, I still think about that movie and some of the themes in that movie. So, yeah, Namida Pramod was a dark star. Al Malu was a dark horse. Because clearly, remember that movie, as we mentioned in the podcast, was just made to get the main guy lead role.
And she propped him up nicely.
She did. She propped him up nicely. No other thoughts about this movie. Very pleasant watch.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't well reviewed. It
kind of falls apart in the second half, as you said.
It does. I think you're fine with it as long as you are aware of what type of film this is once again. You know, this Satyan Antikad moral universe with a happy ending.
Yeah.
Not like some of his, you know, political satires or anything like that. Like, don't go in expecting that. The first half is kind of sweet and lovely. You know, the second half falls apart, unfortunately. The end.
I think there's a song there I really like. Shot in Hampi? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. In Karnataka. And it's very well shot and beautiful. So I definitely like that song.
Well, the cinematographer was Venu.
Okay.
So, you know, really good cinematographer. The film is very bright. So, you know, for a happy film, that it's, you know, well done. And you have some of these really nice moments that are really well shot.
Yeah, because of the movies we watch for this series being often not having a great video quality, this one was refreshing specifically because it's recent and it's awash with beautiful colors.
Yeah.
You know, everything, the editing is much, much smoother than what you would get, you know, before the 2000s. Because, I mean, as much as Chemin was a, you know, milestone moment in editing, it's still rough compared to what we have now. Yeah. So I think the fact that, you know, everything is a little bit smoother, a little bit more modern in this movie made it a little bit of a nice, bright spot in our sea theme.
Yeah. Should we mention where we're going next? I mean, more sea theme.
More sea theme. And so we had planned to talk about Mosaile Kudraminigal, Agashatinda Niram and Amaram.
Thanks for listening to the Polandin Empathy podcast.
If you like what you're hearing, remember to come back for our next episode and share our podcast with your friends.
If you'd like to connect with us, you can email us at polandinempathy@gmail.com or reach out to us on our Twitter feed @polandinempathy. See you next time.